Hello.
Okay. And now we're switching to English. Manik is actually a colleague of mine. We both work at Red Hat in different positions, though. Manik, you didn't always start doing open source programming for a living, right?
No. Open source is something I've been doing for a fair amount of time, but only professionally, say, for the last 5 years. Prior to that, I've been involved in open source in that I've been a contributor to a lot of projects all the way from the late 90s all the way through to right now.
Okay. Well, did you ever do that with the intention of saying, when I start programming on this program, I might be picked up by a company who recognizes me, or did you just do it for fun?
Well, it's actually a funny mix. It's not to do with a long-term goal, like you suggested, to try and find a career in that field, nor is it just for fun either. In fact, that's what I'm going to talk about in this talk, about how communities work in open source and what motivates them and what drives them. Yes, it's partly for fun. There's an element of that, but a lot of it also is getting what you need done. Sometimes that's just the best way to achieve what you're trying to achieve in your own business, in your own company, for your own job, whatever that may be.
And then you fix it and you see how great it is to have other people say, "Ah, oh, you fixed that, and you scratch my
right, right, absolutely, absolutely." And then they do the same for you as well, because they fix stuff that you need fixed as well. And it really is collaborative effort to try and get to achieve a greater goal, which is better software.
Okay. You're now pretty, actually really gaining traction, the name Manik Sultani, because in Finispan, one of the programs that you really initiated really seems to be in an area of high scalability computing that is very much growing now, and you seem to be in a very good position. Did you, when you started programming, did you ever think of, wouldn't it be nice to be like a star programmer or something like that? Or did just that roll over you?
I think it just happens, really. You just do it because you're doing it. You have an idea, you want to develop it. If you see where it goes, really.
Okay, cool.
So it's very hard to actually decide in advance, or to have some sort of an idea in advance as to where you want to take it, until you know how it's going to be accepted by the community, how other people react to it. This is stuff that you can't guess beforehand.
Was it hard for you to sell this in-house, because I assume that you get resources and time from the company to say, we think it's important enough. Did you have to work a lot on the marketing for it, or were you always rather pulled towards doing more?
No, there definitely was work to be done.
Okay.
People need to be convinced. Very often people like to just, from a corporate standpoint, people who control money, who control finances, tend to not want to change things.
Okay.
They tend to say, okay, if things are working, you don't need new stuff. Well, what are you trying to build new stuff for? What's the point? Why is it so good?
So just making something good doesn't it all
fit
the bill? You really need to
blow. You need to convince people why it really is good.
Okay, cool. Convince us with your talk, and have fun with Manik Sultani.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm basically going to talk about open source communities, as the slide says, and how to build them, and how to motivate people to contribute to open source communities, and how to motivate people to actually build good software as a result. What makes me qualified to do so, right? As Tex mentioned, I work for Red Hat, a Linux company, JBoss before that, and I've always liked open source. I've always had stuff to do with open source. Contributing to various projects from a long, long time ago, just to get things done because I needed stuff fixed or whatever. I've always been involved in open source, right? Now, further to that, as Tex mentioned again, I've got a couple of very interesting projects that I've started in the last 18 months or so, right? Two of them, actually, not just in Finispan. In Finispan, another one called JClouds as well. Usually when I do public speaking, I normally speak about these two projects, one or the other, and they're usually very technical talks, but this is the first time I'm doing a non-technical talk about the community behind it. So why open source in the first place, right? I'm not going to teach people what open source is. I'm assuming you are familiar with open source, with the concept of open source software. But just as a very quick summary as to why open source is a good thing, the list of things up there, economies of scale, you're able to build large and complex software very cheaply as a result, because a lot of people need it, a lot of people are willing to contribute and share efforts and collaborate and build complex things. It's good stuff. Open source also improves quality and security, very important. The whole Thousand Eyes thing, open source, the source code's accessible to everybody, developers around the world look at it, they're able to comment on it, they're able to find problems with it, they're able to help you test it, they help you improve quality altogether. Transparency is also very important for another reason, and that's auditability and security. Certain companies will only use software that they can actually see the source code of, because they don't trust other software. Right. If it's, for example, a Department of Defense type thing or whatever, they're not going to use software that might compromise their security, that might compromise their information. A little story that's quite common in the open source world, if human beings had to walk around naked, you make sure that you go to the gym quite often, won't you? So that's kind of what open source software is like. Everyone can see your software. Everyone can see your source code. Right? You're not wearing clothes to cover it, to hide it. That means that your source code, your software, has got to be very good. You can't have bad code out there. People are going to see it, and that's embarrassing. So where does community fit in? Is open source and community, are they the same thing? Does an open source project need a community? Well, not really, and not literally. There are quite a few open source projects out there, some of them very successful, that don't really have much of a community. They tend to have a corporation behind it, with sponsored developers and things like that, but not really a community. And then that still works. But my opinion is that to really gain the advantages of open source software, the stuff that I listed in the previous slide, the whole crowdsourcing effect of having lots of developers developing on it, of having lots of people looking at your code, improving quality, improving security, things like that, you need a community. So there are two aspects to open source software, right? I mean, like I was saying, you've got the whole, one part of open source software is free, it's free to use, it's transparent, the processes are transparent, the code is visible. Right? That you don't need a community for. You can achieve that without a community. But all the other stuff, highly leveraged software, software where you tend to use a community to help you build the software, help you design the ideas around it, that you need a community for. So this is a quote that kind of repeats the same thing. Open source is not about saving money, it's about doing more stuff. Doing more stuff and getting incremental innovation with a finite budget. Right? This is crowdsourcing, that's what it is. So why is community important for all this stuff? Right? So you want to empower people. You want people in your community to feel like they own this stuff. You want them to take pride in this software. Why is that important? It means that there's going to be greater uptake. If there is some guy contributing to your project and he likes it, he likes your project, he thinks that the way you're running this project is good, the kind of software you're building, it's good, it's clever, it's innovative, and he's empowered, you're letting him make his own decisions within your software. You give him a little piece to own within it. It means that any other project that he moves on to after that, or any other company he moves on to, he's more likely to use your project than any other competing project or product. So there is increased uptake. When you empower people, they have a sense of ownership. They actually care about that project. They will go out of their way to defend it. They'll go out of their way to promote it. That's important stuff. The other thing is decentralization, right? With complex software, it's very, very difficult for a single person or a single team to be able to build everything. It's a lot of work. Take Linux as an operating system. If Linux was not open source, if it was not decentralized, it would have taken a lot longer to get where it is today. It could not have happened so quickly. Innovation also happens elsewhere. It's a famous quote from Sun, who's now Oracle, I believe. Basically, you can't expect, again, one man or one team or one group of people to have all the ideas all the time. People outside in the entire world have ideas. And by building a strong community, by having a community that actually cares, that is empowered, you're going to get all these ideas into that one project. It's valuable stuff. I've seen this happen time and time again. It is very, very interesting. So now we talked about community. We talked about empowering people in the community, decentralizing stuff, letting people write their own software, add it to your code. What does that result in? Is that chaos? Sounds a bit like chaos, right? Are there any project managers in the room? A few hands went up. It must be a nightmare, right? Trying to manage something like this. Well, yes, it is, firstly. But how do you get stuff done? I mean, you know, how do you control a roadmap? How do you control when you have releases, release cycles and stuff? When you've got a whole bunch of people on the internet who don't work for you, who are writing this stuff. How do you coordinate things? It's not an easy thing, right? Well, basically, you need to give up a little bit of that control. You need to say, okay, fine. I need to be a little bit more flexible with things like roadmaps, with things like release cycles. There are certain things that are critical, fine, so I need to identify what is critical and make sure they get done. But some of the features should be flexible. You need to allow the community to breathe and expand and contract on its own. It becomes a living being on its own. Right? You need to throw away things like Gantt charts and Microsoft Project and stuff. In the open source space, they're very, very difficult to fit that kind of thing in this paradigm. And then in the end, you still need to make some decisions, right? Decisions such as when do you finally say, okay, fine, something's ready for a release, or so on and so forth, or what features get included in a release, what features don't, how do you do that? Well, there are a couple of very popular approaches that suddenly got louder in the open source space. Designed by committee, so Apache, and if folks have heard of Apache here, it's an open source group that writes a lot of very good software. They tend to have a policy where it's very democratic, it's designed by committee, you have a few people who've earned rights within the project because they've contributed a lot of good stuff, and then they vote on stuff. They have a voting system where you say, okay, fine, this is a release that's coming up, when should it go? A list of dates go up, everyone votes, and then very, very democratic. They also have a mechanism where for every feature that needs to be incorporated into a release, again, everyone votes on it. So, nice fuzzy feeling, you know, everyone feels included, it's this democratic, it's good, right? In practice, that's actually a complete pain. It's a complete pain because it's really hard to actually get stuff done, right? I'm actually a proponent of the second approach, the benign dictator approach. That's how the Linux kernel was written. Linus Torvalds, he is the benign dictator of Linux. He, in the end, decides what goes into the kernel and what does not. If there's any conflict of interest or individual developers who can't decide on something or whatever, Linus steps in and he makes a decision. That's the way it works. Sometimes that is just the best and most efficient way to do things. So, okay, I've convinced you that open source is good. I've convinced you that open source needs community. Good open source needs good community, right? Important stuff. So how do we start building one? Publicize, evangelize, and talk a lot. You need to talk a lot. You need to use social media, use blogs, use Twitter. Get your message out there. This is what I'm doing. This is why I think it's a good thing. This is why I think you guys need it. Advertise it, promote it, right? Use all the tools you've got. You've got YouTube, you've got IRC, you've got mailing list and forums. Most of this stuff is free. I mean, all of this stuff is free, really. You've got social development sites like GitHub and things like that where you can actually attract developers to your project, to interesting code. Use all this stuff and really get your message out there. Make sure people can access your stuff easily. They can find your software easily. They can find demos. They can learn how to use it. Documentation is terrible in open source because, as everyone knows, developers don't like to write documentation, right? It's a problem, right? I mean, I'm a developer. I don't like writing documentation either. Using wikis is a great way to do it because it's very easy. There's low barriers to entry to writing something. You don't need to format something in a particular style or, you know, to fit a document. No, it's a wiki. Press a button, type a few things, oh, I figured this out, click, save, done. The world sees it. The world then can then help improve on it. And this is, again, crowdsourcing your documentation. We've done this very successfully with InfiniSpan, for example, because we got to a point where we finished the first release of our product, of the project. There was no documentation. What did we do? Well, the bunch of the core developers got together saying, okay, look, let's just stay up all night, drink beer for 2 nights, and just write up as much as we can, just like a few short notes about everything, and then have the community look at it and provide feedback. And the community say, this bit's missing, that bit's missing. Okay, go ahead and fill it in. And they do. And wikis help them do this. And this also goes back to empowerment as well, and to actually making people have a sense of ownership. Wikis actually popularize the people who are contributing because they get their name on it. The world can see that they're the ones who actually wrote this part, and they like that. So how do you empower people, right? Be very, very open. Be very open. Every time you design something or you're thinking of something, a new algorithm, a new class, a new whatever within your rather complex software, talk about it. Don't just do it in your head or on a whiteboard in your office with your, you know, peers around you. Talk about it, use mailing lists, use IRC. I mean, when I'm developing software, I'm sitting on IRC. I've got an IRC window open, and I'm constantly chattering about what I'm doing, and the world can see it. I've got a Twitter window open. I'm constantly talking about, oh, you know, which algorithms are best to do this. Blah, I put it up there. People want to engage. They actually do care, and they will engage. And when they do start engaging, that's how they start getting into your community little by little. Right? Of course, always be polite when you're doing this stuff, because there have been a couple of pretty famous mistakes where people have actually told people off and they don't quite realize, but things like mailing lists and stuff and wikis and stuff, I mean, they're there forever. Google caches this stuff. It's there forever. You can't erase something once you've said it, right? So you do want to think carefully about what you say as well. Always be polite. Always be encouraging. Don't call people dumb, even if the ideas are dumb. And feel free to ask for volunteers as well. I do this all the time. Every time we've got a new and complex feature coming up, before I say, okay, fine, I've got 20 things to do, so I'll make this my 21st thing to do. It'll happen. This new feature will be done in 8 months because I've got so much other stuff to do first, right? No, that's the last thing I do. The first thing I do is I put it out there in the community saying, look, you guys all want this feature. Who wants to do it? Don't be shy to ask for volunteers, because people will step up. There are a lot of people out there who want to contribute to projects. They just don't know where to start. They just don't know where to go. They don't know what to do, right? So if you help them, you can actually help them help you by saying, look, do this. If you want to know what to do, do this. It'll be good for you. It'll be good for me. It'll be good for the project, et cetera, et cetera, right? And then, of course, you've got to reward them. You've got to reward them with talking about the fact that that person contributed this feature. They like that. They put it in their CVs. It helps them get a raise in their jobs sometimes. And it's generally good for the community. If you can afford it, if you actually are a company that's developing open source software, and if you have a budget, however small, gift vouchers and stuff, they go a very, very long way. They really make people feel welcome when people actually contribute stuff. Take them out for a beer if they live nearby. I mean, you know, that's a good solution as well. In fact, another thing that we do, or we're just about starting to do in London, that's where I'm from, is with InfiniSpan and JClouds, we're going to have cloud hackathons where once a month we're going to meet in a pub with Wi-Fi and laptops and whiteboards. Everyone who wants to contribute is allowed to turn up, and they will, you know, we have got sponsorship for, like, you know, I don't know, 2 beers each or whatever, right? People can stay as long as they want, provided they're actually writing code. And it's a chance for everyone to sit in the same room, for all of this, the project contributors to sit in the same room, who happen to live nearby, of course, talk about stuff, whiteboard stuff, demo ideas, and very, very dynamically and collaboratively build software very quickly. We're also doing the same thing in San Francisco, because we've got a fairly large group over there. And for the next time, we're actually trying to link the two up via some sort of video link. I don't know if that's going to work, time zones and everything. So the other thing is, now that you've empowered your community members, right? You've got a community, you've got people who actually care, you've empowered them. How do you grow your community? How do you make it bigger? How do you get even more people in? Well, you now have to start delegating the recruitment process, so to speak. Pick the senior guys in your community, the guys who are doing really well, the guys who are famous, the guys who are really engaging in your community, who are writing good software. Get them to blog about what they're doing. Get them to use forums, use IRC, Twitter, social media, blah, 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 talk about it, and try and get even more people coming in. That's how it works. That's with the senior people. Get them to do public talks, like what I'm doing over here, things like that. For more junior members, mentor them, train them, teach them. Teach them about your software, teach them about how they can help. Usually they want to help, they just don't know how. And it's really worth the effort and worth the time doing it. It isn't an investment in time to do so. And in the end, what you're going to end up with is a community of people who like what they're doing. They usually would like each other, hopefully, as well. There won't be any social problems between each other. They like the project, they take pride in their work, and then you're going to end up with kick-ass software. So that's pretty much it. So I'm going to leave you with a link over there. It's to a paper called The Cathedral and the Bazaar. It's pretty old. It's not, I mean, this is written like just many years ago by a chap called Eric S. Raymond. He's one of the chief proponents of open source software. That's your homework. Go and read that. That's very, very interesting. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike. I just heard that we're very short on time, that we have to finish totally on time. So thank you very much for shortening your talk a bit. I think we should still have at least one question for Monique. And maybe in the background, we can already try to establish the stage. Because after this, we're going to have a whole round of the five people that we're talking today, and Simon Blake, who's sitting there from the School of Design Thinking in Potsdam. And we want to have some time to talk. So maybe you can already organize the background while someone asks Manik. Who has a question for Manik? Not very many software developers here, maybe?
Cool, no questions. It's okay, a famous first. Well,
if that stays the case, then let's just say, Manik Sotani, thank you very much for your talk. And we just see each other in 5 seconds anyway. But that's good.